from the Circling Robins at Swamp Hill Studios, located in beautiful Turtle River, Minnesota.
Just east of the swamp.
And up the hill a bit, it's the Rito Roundup!
Hello, everybody. It is the Rito Roundup. Today is March 2nd, 2024. We were going to do a Leap Day special, but here we are.
Yeah, the calendars are off.
How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing good, Rito.
Good. It's a beautiful, beautiful day out there. As I was driving out, I have not seen any robins, but I think a friend of ours has seen at least one in northern Minnesota, which is really
in Bemidji.
Odd. In Bemidji. I haven't heard any. Usually I hear them before I see them. But driving out, I was driving around the north side of the lake, of Lake Bemidji, and it's just so weird at this time of the year to look out at the ice and not see a single ice house out there. You know, it's just been such a bizarre winter, very unfortunately so. And now we were just looking at some of your fruit trees that look like they're trying to bud. I heard that some of the maple trees are running already, and that's really weird, really odd. So hopefully next winter we'll have a brutally cold winter again to remind ourselves that we are still in northern Minnesota, but that is not the winter that we're having this year.
No. I keep looking for beaver tracks in the snow.
Yeah. Any action down there?
No, I haven't seen any. One of my cats scared up a skunk a few weeks ago.
That's fun.
Yeah, and she got it good. But I have to imagine that skunk was just... I don't know if she stumbled upon it and woke it up, or it was just kind of shaken, because they hibernate, right?
Right, right.
And boy, that poor skunk must have been super dry.
Remember Flowers in Bambi? Bambi woke her up when she was sleeping.
Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
That's what I think Cakes did.
Yeah.
But that poor skunk must have just been so dehydrated from a whole season, had no moisture, must have just super dry mouth. And then here comes this kitty. And she's I got to use whatever juice I got
very
left in
concentrated.
Me. Oh, yeah, it was hibernation quality spray.
I have not gone skiing at all. Cross-country skiing, not once. Not a single time this year. You know, it's just sad. Cuz I am a very avid.
Well, you got some skating in this year.
I did early when, I mean, winter was looking good back in early December. You know, I was out on my Nordic skates out on the ice. We had a couple of fun, I don't know, picnics or outings where there's just a bunch of people and families all out skating around, you know, with hockey sticks and without, and just getting out enjoying it. And then 2 weeks after that, it had rained and the temperature had gone way up in December. And then the ice has never really recovered.
And we got a little bit of snow, and that kind of slushed everything up too.
Yeah. So the ice quality is just poor and dangerous. You know, we saw how many people did Beltrami County have to rescue off of Upper Red Lake?
Right.
Which just infuriates me that we have to put our county first responders, you know, at risk so that other people can make money off of tourists. You know, it just, I talked with the sheriff about that a little bit at the State of the Band address in Red Lake a couple of Fridays ago. And he said that there might be some work in the legislature this session to take a fraction of the money when people register their ice houses, that some of that money might go to a dedicated fund to reimburse law enforcement for having to do these rescues. Because I think they're going to, until we figure out a way to put a stop to it, we're going to continue to have to do that, because the resorts are going to continue to push people out as early as they possibly can, knowing full well that it will be local law enforcement that will come in then and take care of it if there's a problem, at no cost to the resorts. But yeah, so it is a frustration of mine that probably is not going to go away anytime soon. But it is beautiful. It's about 40 degrees out today. It was about 55 yesterday. I mean, it is gorgeous. It is fun. I work in the world of homelessness, and so it makes me feel good to know that the people that I work with are a little bit safer because the temps aren't so low. But that's the long-term destruction to our way of life and to our the critters that are up here is not a fair trade, you know. We need these cold, cold days in northern Minnesota to keep the creepy crawlies that kill our trees from getting up here, you know. We need these cold days and cold weather to keep our lakes cool to provide habitat for walleye who really like cold water, you know. And so there is a worry that we're going to lose our pine trees and our walleye and we'll just be deciduous and bass up here.
And turkeys.
And turkeys. And that's just a different, it's just not what we know northern Minnesota to be. But
I heard that the birch trees are on the march north.
Yeah, everything, pine and birch, they're all moving. Yeah, they're all moving north.
But maple trees are coming in.
Yeah, maple and oak and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just going to be a different place in 40 years than it is now, unfortunately. So what a really, really a positive beaver update here we got. And you haven't even seen any beaver yet. So I don't know, maybe next episode we'll have some beaver in the beaver update. Wait, do you know what time it is?
Already?
Yeah.
Russell Watch. Come on, you bunch of crowning sons of bitches. Haul me to jail.
Well, what has he done this time?
Well, you know, often it's not often it is what he's done. Sometimes it's what he hasn't done, you know.
Like show up?
Like show up for meetings, vote for the bonding bill that brought important, you know, millions of dollars to his district to pay for wastewater treatment upgrades and well upgrades in some small municipalities, money for the tribal college in Red Lake, money for the a rec center in Leech Lake that he did not support any of this. But then just recently, so as we've discussed in previous podcasts, the county is being compelled to build a new jail. And we've talked at length about that, about how we really do need a new jail. And we kind of have two ways as a county to pay for the cost. One is through a sales tax and the other through property tax. Sales tax for Bemidji is the better option from my perspective, because we know that in Bemidji, something like 80% of the sales tax is paid by non-Bemidji residents. So do we want our property tax to cover all of it? And so then, you know, Bemidji people paying for all of it and Beltrami people, or do we want to farm some of that cost out to people that are outside of our taxing authority? So we had a referendum last year on election day. It was like November 3rd or something like that. It was the only item on the ballot was the referendum, and it passed, I think, like 90% or something, 85%. It was a really good turnout. I was surprised at how many people turned out, and everybody turned out to vote for the sales tax. Apparently there's some, in order for us to have that vote and to initiate that sales tax, a local option sales tax, it's called, or LOST is the acronym. You need to have special legislation from the state of Minnesota to allow us to be able to have the local option sales tax. So the state passed a statute that allowed us to hold the referendum. The referendum passed, but then it was noticed that there was something wrong in the language of the state statute that allowed for the referendum. And I'm sorry, I don't know exactly what it was. I don't think it was anything major. But so they had to, at the beginning of the session this year, which started, I think, on the 12th of February, but middle of February, right away they put forward this bill that would correct whatever the error was. And it was really, it was innocuous. It wasn't anything really major. And in the House.
But it had to be ratified.
But it had to be done to write it, you know. So in the House, there's the vote, and two people voted against it. And Grossel was one of them. And to my knowledge, he hasn't given an explanation. Perhaps it is that he is like, no new taxes, you know, but it's not. Yeah, I'm not going to argue the finer points of that, but it's not really like we are going to pay for this. How do we want to pay for it? you know, voting against this isn't going to keep the jail from being built, right? So whatever reason he voted against it, he voted against it. But to me, it's just like, just how can I snub my constituents one last time? I already have told everybody that I'm moving to Alaska because Minnesota sucks, you know, which is basically what he said in his resignation letter.
Well, and he tried to incorporate us into North Dakota before, too.
And he voted. Yes, he pushed hard, authored the bill that would allow northern and western counties to secede to the Dakotas. It was just ludicrous. And really, I mean, it borders on like oath violating actions from him. But so. Everything he does. I remember he told the president of BSU, Bemidji State University, once when Bemidji was not in his district, that he would never do anything to help out BSU, that he would never vote for a single piece of legislation that would benefit BSU. So he really kind of hates his constituents, you know, and he's considered a law and order guy, but he clearly hates cops when he's in trouble. You know, he has no problem demeaning our law enforcement, our first responders, nurses, anybody else that gets in his way.
Like you just said, one last time, kind of a screw you to his constituents. Uh-huh. He's not going to be your opponent next year.
No, he's not.
So, I mean, is this the end of a Grossel watch? I mean, I guess at some point it will be, but I mean, why do we continue to care about this guy?
I think the Grossel watch will end at the end of the session because he is still our state rep. He still is technically, in theory, representing us in St. Paul.
Well, he still has a vote.
He still has a vote. Yes. And then the other thing is that, so I have an opponent. I don't recall if we've talked, we must have talked about that. Duran, D-U-R-A-N, Bidal. And I forgive me if I'm mispronouncing his first name, Bidal Duran, B-I-D-A-L, D-U-R-A-N. And in Mr. Duran's announcement, he talked about how much he respects Grossel and basically wants to emulate him when he gets into office. And when I first read that, I kind of joked and I said, well, he can represent the district just as well as Grossel did by just going to the bar up in Gonvick and hanging out there, you know, which is, I'm sure, is a great bar. But like Grossel never represented us. You know, he claimed to be this law and order guy that really supported the cops. But again, I've never called a police officer a crayon eating bastard. Grossel has on a number of times in one occasion. the reason that it's relevant is that I think that Grossel, his mindset, his philosophy, his actions are very indicative and representative of the Republican Party in North Central Minnesota. And if we elect another Republican here in Northwest in North Central Minnesota, we can expect to see similar representation that we got from Grossel, which is almost none. You know, and I'll bring up again, the state gave out $18 billion in investments. I think it was closer to $20 billion with the small bonding bill that they did last year. Or was that? Yeah. And Bemidji received zero of that money. And again, I mentioned earlier all the different places in the neighborhood that got some funding from this that Grossel didn't vote for. Right. So he didn't even vote for this funding. He didn't try to get any money to come to the city of Bemidji that desperately needs it we'll be building a new city hall soon. We'll be building a new fire station downtown soon or somewhere. And these are multi-million-dollar projects. And we could have gotten a small slice of that $18 billion surplus and we got nothing. And we can thank that to the leadership that we have in St. Paul. So where was Steve Green, who voted against the bonding bill? Where was Grossel and even Bliss? You know, I don't think any of them voted for the bonding bill. Maybe Bliss did. I don't know. But I know that neither Green nor Grossel voted for the bonding bill. And so what do we want to do? You know, we're going to be looking at the Republicans not being able to take control of, well, the Senate isn't up for election. The mayor's office isn't, or the governor's office isn't up for election. It looks very likely that the House will be held by the DFL this coming fall. And so the Republicans are more and more just becoming an opposition party. So they don't stand for anything. They're just against everything. You know, they don't want us to invest. They want to give corporations bigger tax breaks. They don't care about regulations when it comes to land and water and things like that. And everything that I've seen from Mr. Duran, and I would encourage you guys to go and look at his Facebook page, it's all just cops. Public safety is important, but we are much more than just public safety. And if that's all that we're running on, you're forgetting about everything else, about schools, about roads, about healthcare, mental health care, about housing. You know, I mean, we need to have well-paid and well-trained public safety officers, but that is one of a cadre of issues that are important to our community. And I just see it is just going to be another Grossel, you know. So that's why I bring up what Grossel is doing, because I guarantee you, as he makes these votes, as he does what he does this session, to the extent that he participates, we'll see how much he even participates. Anytime anyone says, I'm going to retire in 9 months, they should really just quit right then. You know, I'm going to retire in 2 years. Well, maybe you should just retire now, because the organization is going to keep on moving and you're sunsetting your activities. So just step out of the way and let someone else come in that has a full head of steam and can keep on moving. So we'll see what he does. But I'm sure that my good friend Duran, Mr. Duran, will be supportive of everything that Grossel does, which just will underscore why it's really important that we need some new people representing us. Plus, the other thing is that as they are these oppositional candidates or they have these oppositional positions, they're not really at the bargaining table because they're against everything. And so we need someone representing North Central Minnesota that can talk to the people that are crafting the bills and make sure that they're not just a metro-centric policy that works great for the metro, but maybe doesn't work in greater Minnesota. And so we need someone there that can respectfully have dialogue with the other policymakers and say, you know, maybe we need to tweak this a little bit so that it makes more sense in northern Minnesota. You know, so
they don't even invite Grossel to those meetings.
I don't imagine he would show up even if he was invited. But no, because he's not in leadership, and he's just, I mean, even, and I've heard this from Republicans and Democrats down in St. Paul, that nobody respects him. Not even the Republicans don't really even respect him. They'll say nice things when asked about him when he's getting in trouble, you know, when he's getting arrested. But they don't really care for him. And I understood that they were trying really hard to get him to resign after his DWI so that they could run and hopefully get someone in a special election so they wouldn't have an open seat. And he refused to. So he doesn't care about his party. He doesn't care about his constituents. All he cares about is himself. You know, and even that, I would say that he doesn't do a very good job of taking care of. It will be good for his health for him to be out of office, and he can focus on self-improvement.
I hear he's doing a cameo pages now.
You're not serious.
So
are you serious?
Your birthday's coming up.
You're not serious. Okay.
He's following the Santos playbook.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's our Grossel watch, but yeah, what a guy. But what I really want to talk about in this episode, and this is probably going to be, if we do this right, it'll be our shortest one. But I've said that many, many times, and I don't think we've ever had a shortest episode. but what I really want to talk about today is housing in Bemidji specifically, but in Beltrami County generally, and the district at large, the second district at large. Because we are in a big housing crisis that you may or may not notice. We just do not have the amount of bedrooms in our community that we need for everybody to be able to have one. And this goes beyond just, you know, like I run a homeless shelter, a day center, an overnight shelter. And I'm not just talking about unhoused people that need housing. I'm also talking about people that need improved housing. Our housing stock is old and it's deteriorating. And we have moved from being a majority renter homeowner community, which we were when I was on the city council. We were, I think, 51% of Bemidji were homeowners. Now, 60-some percent of us are renters. So it's a pretty big shift in about a decade from majority homeowner to majority renter. And so that puts a lot of pressure on making sure that the rental units that we have are good, safe, dignified places for our neighbors and our residents to live in. Some of you might have seen a letter to the editor in the Bemidji Pioneer that came out on the 7th of February, written by Patrick Harrington, who is the owner and operator of an organization called Housing Matters. And their job basically is to, I guess in a nutshell, house difficult to house people. And so he works with a lot of people that are using Section 8 vouchers or other sorts of subsidies to get into housing. And he highlighted some concerns that he has on two apartment complexes in Bemidji. One is the Century Apartments, which is over on Washington Avenue as you go south out of town. And the other is Pine Ridge Apartments, which is on 30th Street, kind of behind the mall, but then to the west of the mall complex on 30th. Both of these apartment buildings or series of buildings are owned by the same company called Tandem Properties, I think is what their name is. And they are out of either Moorhead or Fargo. I can't remember, but they don't live in town.
That's the management company?
That's the management company.
They didn't actually build the...
They didn't build them. I don't know when they acquired them, but they bought them in the last couple of years, I believe. And this is a concerning trend that we've talked about before, about out-of-town owners that then don't keep up their properties. They're more than happy to collect the rent, but they're not fixing windows that are breaking or doors that won't lock and more serious things. I've over the last, I don't know, 18 months or so, I've been hearing more and more horror stories of people living in those apartments and just having really difficult problems. They call their landlord, and the message, we've all heard this message, the mailbox has not been set up or the mailbox is full. So they cannot leave a message to let their landlords know that there's an issue. There was another article. So Patrick did a really good job of just talking about his frustrations that he's having with his clients having to live in these really substandard conditions.
Is this the same one a couple years ago where the heating went out and they were...
No, that was the Ridgeway Apartments that is on Ridgeway Avenue, to the west of or to the north of Lukens, right? On 30th and Ridgeway. Those buildings who were owned by I think it was a Fargo or a Grand Forks company. They ran those buildings into the ground. Literally, they have now been demolished because they were deemed to be uninhabitable and too expensive to fix. So they've been tore down, and they were purchased by White Earth Reservation, which I'm super excited about because they are going to rebuild, and they're going to have security guards, and they're going to have all the things that you need to have a safe neighborhood. Nor is it the Red Pine Estates, which is more or less right across the street from Lukens North. That building was condemned last year in July, and I don't know the status of that building. Some people have asked me, and I just haven't heard. They've been looking at whether or not it can be fixed and then re-inhabited, or if it's a teardown, because there are some issues with the trusses being incorrectly installed. And so is there a patch that can be made that is safe that'll shore up the building? But they were literally looking at a multi-story collapse where like the third story was going to collapse onto the second and then the second onto the first. And as traumatic and tragic as it was for the residents there to be given basically 6 days over the 4th of July holiday weekend to get out. Nobody died, you know, that was good. Nobody got hurt. That was really important. We saw something happen in, I think it was Davenport, Iowa, and there's an even more, a bigger building in Miami, I think, somewhere in Florida, where you had these collapses that happened in the middle of the night when people were sleeping and people died, you know. So it is really important that we make sure that our buildings are safe. So those two buildings, or those two properties, a total of four buildings, and I want to say it was about 150 units between the four buildings that we lost in that like 12-month period, 18-month period. And now we're looking, I went to both Century Apartments and Pine Ridge Apartments and just kind of tried to eyeball. I was basically counting balconies to see how many units there were. Between the two sites, I counted 172 units. And so that tells me there's probably at least about 250 people, if not more, that potentially could be living in these apartments. And if it gets to the point where the city has to pull their rental permit or condemn the buildings because they're not being kept up, that is a lot of people that then again, we need to absorb. And these are some of the apartment buildings where people, when they got kicked out or not kicked out, but when they had to leave Ridgeway, had to go there. And so we're running out of places that are supportive housing units, you know, apartments where the landlords accept Section 8 vouchers.
So when the city or the local authorities discover these flaws in these buildings, I mean, are they like the tenants who call that number and the mailbox is full? I mean, do we have any ways of sort of holding those companies accountable?
I'll back up and just say, like, what happened at Red Pine Estates, that was not an issue, though I had issue with how the landlord handled it. The landlord wasn't the one that built the building, and it wasn't their fault per se that the trusses were not sufficient, right? What they did once they found that out, I take issue with, but that is different from what happened at Ridgeway and what we see potentially happening at Century and Pine Ridge. And so there was another article on February 27th from the Pioneer, and February 17th rather. The article started disrepair and property damage, yada, yada, yada. So you can look that one up. And that was really good. That was a straight news story. It wasn't a letter to the editor. It was a journalist from the Bemidji Pioneer going in and interviewing tenants and trying to interview the landlords, but they wouldn't respond to her. But they did. She did talk to the city. And apparently the city has, I don't know, a different phone number, or when they call, they do get a response from the landlords. And I'll just say it was a little bit disconcerting. So the article, if you get a chance, do read it. But if you don't, they list off this litany of problems at both of the sites, and had problems with like doors that can't lock that are the entry to the building. And like one woman was talking about how she got additional locks put onto her door because sometimes at night she would hear people jiggling her door to see if it was unlocked, trying to get in. You know, think of that of a 65-year-old woman living on her own, you know, living by herself. And then at 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, she hears people are trying to get into her apartment. I know also of someone who has a sliding door and it won't lock. And it's been that way since they moved in, and the landlord won't do anything. They will cash her check, her rent check, but they won't fix the door. And so she had to kind of jerry rig it and get a dowel or something to put in there so that door, because she lived on the first floor and her patio door is open to the public, and it's an unsecured yard. Anybody can just walk up and go to. And she's got little kids and stuff and is just really worried about it. I was saying that it was a little bit disconcerting hearing the city kind of say, oh no, they're responsive. They just got to work on some of these issues, but it's okay. You know, and I think that at a certain point, we just have to really be honest and say, this is concerning. This is troubling. We don't think that they're doing enough, but I do not want to beat up on the city. I do that plenty enough, lately. And, That's not my intent to do here, but what in it? So these two apartments, apartment complexes are, I think, kind of canaries, you know, but we've had a lot of canaries dying in these, in our minds here the last couple of years. And so we really need to look at the fact that a lot of the supportive housing that we have in our community was built in the 70s and 80s, and they're kind of aging out, and we are not replacing them at the same rate at which we are losing them. So we're not even able to keep ground, keep a pace, you know, we're falling. Even if these buildings weren't, those four buildings hadn't been condemned, we still would have had a shortage in housing. The Beltrami County HRA, which is the Beltrami County Housing and Redevelopment Authority, is in charge of building the Conifer Estates out kind of by where BICAP, or not BICAP, but Head Start is, you know, by Target. There's those softball fields in between the softball fields and the bypass.
Like behind Home Depot.
Yep, behind Home Depot over there, there's those apartment buildings. The county does that. I think a private company is, manages it once they get built, but the county HRA, Housing Redevelopment Authority, finds the dollars and puts those projects together to build those units. But we're not building them. We haven't been able to build them fast enough to keep up with the need. And then on top of it, then we're losing existing housing. And so it's just really is troublesome. I don't know about the market rate apartment buildings and what their state is. Cause like on 30th Street, there's a lot of market rate housing there too. That's not subsidized. I haven't heard any complaints about them. Or like the apartments on Ann Street, you know, there's all those apartments, that the Whalen company has built. But then, you know, I've rented, I guess I never did rent a place downtown, but I have a lot of friends that have over the years, that have rented the houses downtown that have been broken up into multi units. And those are just old. A lot of those houses were built in the 19-aughts through 20s, and they've been lived in hard by a lot of people and stuff. So
students,
a lot of students. Yep. And then that, yeah. So looking forward, we just know that we need to build more housing in Bemidji especially. But then, you know, when I was door knocking 2 years ago or 18 months ago up in Lake of the Woods, I heard the same things in Bidette and in Williams, in Lake of the Woods, where there just isn't enough housing. And so then you get flight, where people don't stay because there's nowhere to live. And when there's nowhere to live, then companies don't want to expand or relocate because they need to have housing for their workforce. And so it not only is like an ethical thing of where we want to make sure that all of our neighbors have safe, dignified places to live, it's also an economic tool to bring in investment and grow our local economies.
And it also seems like there's the market for it. I mean, if you were looking to as an investment.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems that we have here is that although our rents are getting more and more expensive, you know, any renter that they will tell you all about that. But one of the problems that we have had historically is that it costs just as much to build a house or an apartment building in Bemidji as it does in Fargo or Minneapolis or Duluth. And in those bigger urban areas, you can demand more rent, you know, and so it is your return on investment is going to come back sooner if you build where you can charge more. Also, sometimes a home will be built and then it appraises for less than the cost to produce it because of the depressed economy. So when you have an economy where the majority of the people like Bemidji, the city of Bemidji, everybody is broke. We have a really low median income. I think it's like $36,000 for a family of four inside the city limits. And so we can't afford to a $200,000 home, a $300,000 home, a lot of people. So then nobody's going to build those homes because they know that they can't sell them. And there's other things that lead into that too, but.
And I imagine the trend in VRBOs and are kind of taking away.
Yes, that takes away from rentals and because something, a property that someone maybe was going to sell when they're going to move to a new market, to a new town, maybe they're going to hang on to that and turn it into a VRBO. And then, so now neither homeowner, you know, owner occupied nor renter is going to have access to that property. So that is to, we're not quite where a lot of other communities are with that, but it is something that is a concern that we need to pay attention to. So the point here is that we need to build more supportive housing. That is housing that accepts Section 8 vouchers and other sorts of supplementary, you know, rent help. We need to build more workforce housing, say housing that people that can afford just by having a job. You know, an interesting thing, a lot of times, this is a quick aside, when I talk to people about our shelter, they often will ask me, what are we doing to help people find work? Like, most of the people that are employable have jobs. We have people that have two jobs that are staying at our shelter. It's not that they don't have a job. They just don't get paid enough to be able to afford to live in the community. But so then we also need more, you know, $300,000 homes, $400,000 homes. I know anecdotally from talking to people at BSU and people at Sanford and people at Greater Bemidji, our economic development agency, that we get professors and doctors that come up here that want to work up here, and then they look around and they literally can't find a house. And so then they don't come here because of lack of housing. So we also need 500,000 to $1 million homes up here for that echelon of resident. So then, you know, what do we do? And here's where I said earlier, I don't want to beat up on the city. There was a third article in the Pioneer. That was February 27th. And it was about priorities that the city was setting for 2024. And one of the priorities that they set was housing, which is wonderful. And I really applaud them for recognizing and identifying housing as a critical need in our community. I was told once by a city council member, they are no longer on the council, but this was years ago, told me that housing was not a matter of public policy, rather an issue of personal responsibility, which is one of the biggest misunderstandings of the role of public policy in American life that I've ever heard expressed by an elected official, because of course it's policy driven. You know, of course it is. And I wanted to retort by asking if they took advantage of the mortgage interest deduction on their taxes, because that is housing policy. That is the most expensive housing policy in the U.S. is the mortgage interest deduction. I think it's like $85 billion a year. Think of the housing that we could build with that $85 billion. And it's a regressive policy, because the richer you are, the nicer home you have, the bigger mortgage you have, the bigger your benefit. And the more modest home you have, the more modest mortgage you have, the smaller your benefit. And then, of course, if you're a renter, you don't get that benefit. So very regressive. And, well, I'm not going to go down that, but that is something interesting that nobody ever thinks of when they talk about, you know, when they hear about Section 8 vouchers and people getting subsidized. Like, your housing is just as subsidized, you know, so stop complaining, because you have a subsidy too. It's just that you get yours simple and through the tax code. You don't have to go down to the county and stand in line and fill out a bunch of paperwork. You know, it's much easier. You don't have to prove your need for it. You just get it. So the city has identified this as an issue, and the city is not in Minnesota, counties are responsible for human services, generally speaking. Cities are not, especially small cities are not. So it's not really even in their, I don't want to say it's not in their purview. It is the health and welfare of their citizens is in their bailiwick, but they can work with the county, with the Beltrami HRA, with the Bemidji HRA. They can be advocates. They can help seek grants that will make it easier for developments to go ahead. Sometimes, you know, again, it costs a lot of money to build apartment buildings. And sometimes when you add up all the units and figure out what the rent is, it just won't cash flow the debt in accrued to create the apartments. So sometimes, we can do different things. There's a TIF district, that's tax incremental financing, that the city can set aside and say, okay, so what you would have paid in property taxes for the next 20 years or 30 years, we're going to take that money and divert it to infrastructure, to putting in the parking lots, putting in the water lines, the sewer lines, and that to help bring down the cost. There are a couple other things that they can do, but really just having that, you know, a lot of times it's the bully pulpit, it's the cheerleading that is so important. There is a group of agencies and city people and county people that are meeting once a month to kind of talk about housing in general. We started meeting when Red Pines Estates got shut down back in July to really focus on helping people. Like one victory that I always like to express about that whole thing is that not one of those tenants stayed at a shelter during that time when they were in flux. And that was because of the good work that all of these various organizations were doing. And then we decided that we should just continue to meet because we know that there are ongoing housing issues like I've highlighted so far in this episode. So it's great that we are there trying to figure out what is our plan as a community when this happens again, because we assume that there will be other buildings that are going to age out and that from one day to the next, a person is going to go from having an apartment to not, and not just one person, but 30 people or 200 people. And so we have to kind of figure out how we can manage that better. And I mean, one way is by building more housing. There's other tools that we can do. Well, there's the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Last legislative session was allocated about $1 billion. And this is just a historic investment into the Housing Finance Agency. And so now they have to figure out how to get that money out the door and where is it going to go to. And so I think that what we really need to do as far as subsidized housing goes is really look at, well, and workforce housing, is look at the RFPs that are going to be coming out and learning about what they're going to look like, their request for proposals. These are the way that then cities or developers can apply for these dollars to help them develop new properties that'll then bring down the construction cost. And then hopefully that'll equate lower rents and lower sale prices for owner occupied. So it's going to take a whole village to house a whole village, you know, and I'm just elated with the city that they really are seeing this as something that they want to look at. I know it's on the minds of the county as well. And so hopefully this year we'll see some movement and really develop some strategies and some plans to really ramp up. I mean, we need to have a housing boom in the Bemidji area for the next decade. You know, there is a study that was recently done that said that Bemidji needs 1,100 new housing units between owner occupied and rentals. So that's a lot of building, and that's not to accommodate like artificial growth of people moving in from outside. That's just to take care of ourselves, you know, people that are here, because we have a lot of people doubling up, a lot of families living together, multi-generational settings, which sometimes are great, but sometimes the house that they're in is too small, and it's not because they want to, but because they have to, you know. So we have a lot of work to do, but you know, the first step is identifying the problem and then going about trying how to figure out how to take care of it. And I will say to you that one of my goals as a future representative in St. Paul is to make sure that as much of these dollars as possible are coming to rural Minnesota, that are coming to North Central Minnesota, because it's easy to just focus on the metro because that's where slightly over half of the population lives in the 7 county metro region. But there's a lot of us out here too that, you know, and we need to make sure that we are being taken care of, that we are getting the allocations that we deserve so that we can have the good life that we have come to love and enjoy and continue that on for generations. So that's really what I wanted to talk about this episode, and we're going to keep it short, or as short as it is. I don't know. I do want to remind you that we are not getting any emails from anybody ever. We are willing to mail you a stick from the Beaver Lodge. If you remember those early days of the podcast,
we've got a contest.
The contest is just to email us and tell us that you're out there.
You're going to get 50 sticks if there's 50 emails.
Well, no, it'll be the first two or three. Although our experience in the past is that when people would win the contest, whatever it might have been, they would say, I'm not giving you my mailing address because I don't want to
keep your stick.
Yeah. But we've got them. We've got plenty. We can shine them up and send them out. And you can do that at readoroundup@gmail.com. That's readoroundup@gmail.com. You can check out the city and county websites to see when, where, and how to participate in their meetings. Oh, one quick note. At the county, they are going to be talking about redistricting. I don't want to get into that because then this will be a really long episode. But go to the county website. That is co.beltrami.mn.us. And find information about upcoming public hearings. I think that some are coming up this week in early March. And go there and express your concerns.
Are you sure the city is continuing with their online presence? I know they got Zoom bombed a couple episodes ago or meetings ago.
Yeah, they got Zoom bombed, and they are deliberating whether or not they want to stop doing that. Well, is it Microsoft Meets or something like that? I can't remember what.
No, I think they use WebEx. WebEx.
Yeah. And regardless of whether they continue to use WebEx or not, the meetings will still be simulcast online. You just won't be able to participate. The nice thing about WebEx is that if you want to speak at the comment period, but you can't be there, you can go on WebEx and then they turn you on.
County does that too with Zoom.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
And I think there's probably a button that someone could have pressed.
Yes.
To have prevented the Zoom bomb.
Yeah.
That happened to the county a few years ago.
It did right away. Our first Zoom meeting, we got bombed good. We got bombed real good. It was,
Someone took over the whiteboard pen.
Right. And went wild with swastikas and male anatomy. Exciting.
That's the most exciting county meeting.
Since the refugee vote.
Yeah.
So give us an email. Oh, and then the city website is ci.bemidji.mn.us, and you can figure out when, where, and how to participate in their meetings. But take a look at the redistricting. Go in and talk about the importance of not splitting up the city. That would be my thing. I'm afraid that they're going to try to make it so that city residents will have no voice on the county board. But we shall see. I think that's all that I... You got anything? Music is brought to us, as always, by the Jake Baldwin motif.
No, I think that's about it for me.
It's a beautiful day out there.
Yeah.
Get out there and enjoy it, everybody. Thank you much. We love you.